This is Lake Effect from WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for listening today. For the last week, we've been discussing race relations in Milwaukee and asking the question of what we mean when we say that Milwaukee is a segregated community. We seem to take it on faith that whatever the reason and whatever the result, Milwaukee is a city where blacks, whites, and Hispanics, by and large, don't live next door to each other or even share many of the same experiences. But how do we know that's the case? How do we say for certain that the Milwaukee area is divided by race and not by class or even by other factors? Mark Levine is one person who is in a unique position to measure the divisions that make up Milwaukee. Levine is the director of the Center for Economic Development at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He's led some groundbreaking studies on the challenges that face urban Milwaukee and the metropolitan area as a whole. Levine, who is also one of the panelists at WUWM's Project Milwaukee Race Relations Forum, told Lake Effect's Mitch Teich that it is possible to quantify segregation.
Well, it is obviously possible to quantify it. We have obviously the data that shows the degree to which different racial groups are concentrated in different geographic areas, and there are all sorts of measures of segregation which incontrovertibly demonstrate that Milwaukee ranks among the most segregated cities and metropolitan areas in the country. But it is quite true, as you mentioned, that the segregation that exists now is not only not the segregation of the Jim Crow era in the South, but also not the segregation of red lines being drawn around neighborhoods as they were under the FHA and a series of other mechanisms earlier, which, while not as obvious as Bull Connor's German Shepherds, were every bit as discriminatory. But what's important to understand today is that there's a kind of a path dependency. It's an academic word for saying the past matters in shaping the present, and that the decisions that were made earlier, the actions that were taken later, kind of get written into the DNA of a region. And the set of practices of drawing red lines, of discriminatory realtors, of discriminatory lending, all have shaped land use patterns in a way that now reverberate through today. The second point, though, is that we have built upon that foundation a set of inequalities, a kind of a polarization that then feeds upon itself in a way that may not be as overtly kind of obvious as discrimination by drawing a red line, but have the same effect of separating racial groups and providing sort of separate but unequal kinds of environment. And the lack of transportation connections between various parts of the community, the lack of affordable housing in various areas, and of course the income inequality, which underpins a lot of this, all I think flow from those earlier decisions, but now take on a life of their own.
Well, and taking the case of transportation as an issue, I mean, the issue we hear is that the jobs that are being created in the Milwaukee area, even in a time when there are fewer jobs that are being created, there are still jobs. The jobs that are being created in places where people in the inner city, mainly African-American people who are unemployed, don't have access to get them.
You know, I think that zeroes in really on you know, the key kind of economic underpinning of the racial inequality that exists in Milwaukee. And, you know, it's important to recognize that Milwaukee's not unique in the vast majority of jobs in the region being created outside of the central city. The reason that that's such a devastating phenomenon in Milwaukee, and perhaps more devastating maybe than any other metropolitan area in the country, is because we have such a low level of black suburbanization here. So that, you know, when you were pointing out jobs being created in the suburbs, African Americans living in the central city, the problem here, say compared to even Detroit, let alone Baltimore, Boston, and other places, is that such a small percentage of African Americans are living in the suburbs where the jobs are being created that the spatial mismatch, as it's called, is particularly devastating here. In Detroit, for example, 30% of the black middle class in Detroit, you know, households making over 40,000, which is kind of a rough indicator, live outside the city of Detroit, live in the suburbs. So to the extent that jobs are being created in Detroit, and maybe Detroit's a bad example given the current developments in the auto industry, the African Americans living in the suburban areas will be geographically closer and have a, you know, ability to kind of get access to those jobs. In Milwaukee, under 10%, about 9.5% of African American households making over $40,000 a year live in the suburbs. So essentially, 9 out of every 10 African American households are in the central city, a much higher percentage than any place in the country. And so as a consequence, you know, it isn't so much, you know, why are corporations creating jobs to the extent they're creating jobs in the suburbs here? That's taking place everywhere. The key question is, why are we not providing mechanisms either to encourage them to create the jobs in the central city where the workers are, or to create or to establish ways to get central city workers out to those jobs more effectively.
There is a statistic, and it's a few years old, but given everything we've heard in preparing the series, I would imagine it's still true today, that I think it goes like this. Compared to the white middle class and affluent, Metro Milwaukee's black middle class and affluent households are far more likely to live in neighborhoods with substantial poverty.
Right.
Can you explain that phenomenon?
You know, I wish I could fully explain it. The statistic is rather startling. You know, if you take African-American households, it's a small number, obviously, but you take African-American households making more than $100,000 a year, you would assume have the ability to live anywhere almost, you know, that they want in the region. 42% of those households in Metro Milwaukee live in neighborhoods in which the neighborhood itself has a poverty rate higher than 20%. So they're essentially living in a you know, reasonably high poverty neighborhood. Compared to we've looked at Minneapolis, St. Louis, and Baltimore cities, you know, around the same size as Milwaukee. And for that 100,000 plus a year households, about 14-15% of those households live in these high poverty neighborhoods. So that's, I mean, about three times the rate here in Milwaukee. And that, I think, speaks to the degree to which there is this, you know, I call it an iron collar, you can call it a brick wall, that separates city from suburb and limits, you know, the welcoming attitude, perhaps, for African-American households to move to suburban areas. There is undoubtedly, and the Public Policy Forum has done some interesting surveys on this, you know, perhaps a little bit in the way of a choice factor. I don't think necessarily choice in the sense of affluent African-American families saying, well, you know, we'd prefer to live in a relatively poor central city neighborhood to live in a somewhat more affluent suburban neighborhood, but there may be some kind of racial clustering going on. But it's difficult when you ask the question, how do you explain this? Mm-hmm. It's difficult for me to sort of accept the explanation without some really, you know, sort of in-depth research that degree of clustering is greater here in Milwaukee than any place in the country. I mean, why wouldn't affluent African-American families, for example, in cities that, you know, have a highly developed sense of African-American community, let's say like Atlanta, have that same kind of clustering? But they don't. The African-American middle class in Atlanta is overwhelmingly suburbanized. It's suburbanized in many cases in relatively segregated or separate, better word,
homogenous, if you will.
African-American
right.
suburbs. So I think, you know, we end up looping back around to this basic argument. Why are our suburbs so inhospitable to African Americans?
Well, and can you look at the choice issue and the mobility issue for the black population in Milwaukee without also looking at the choice issue and the mobility issue for the white population, where the white population has gone from inner city Milwaukee?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important point to recognize. There's certainly been no limit in the ability of the white community in Milwaukee to suburbanize. Suburbanization rates among whites, by whatever social class indicator one uses, whatever household income indicator one uses, in Milwaukee are about the same as they are nationally. So I think nationally, 70% or so of white households in metropolitan areas live in the suburbs. And in Milwaukee, it's 69% or 70%. I mean, so the percentage is exactly the same. The big difference, as I said, is for African Americans. Nationally, about 39% of African Americans in metropolitan areas live in the suburbs. In Milwaukee, it's only 5%, 6%. So that's a big difference. And I think, you know, the fear that I have for the future of this community is that we have inexorably moved in this city-suburb divide to really two very separate kinds of worlds, separate and unequal, to borrow the apocalyptic language of the Kerner Commission in the 1960s, where we've got, you know, suburbs which are overwhelmingly white, many pockets of which are quite prosperous. We have some of the most prosperous suburbs actually in the country in both Waukesha and Ozaukee County. All of the job growth, the net job growth that's occurred in metropolitan Milwaukee has occurred in these suburban areas. City and suburb are poorly linked by transportation. We're one of the few major metropolitan areas that doesn't either have a regional rail system or even one on the books. And the one plan that we have to do a rail line to the south, this slow boat KRM line, won't do anything at all, you know, for the central city. The commuting patterns that have emerged in our community in the metropolitan area are such that basically, if you live in Waukesha County, or if you live in Ozaukee County, or if you live in Washington County, you work in those counties. Well over 60% of the residents of those counties who are in the workforce work in those counties themselves. So if you break it down by social interaction, if you break it down by where people shop, if you break it down where people recreate, if you break it down where people work, we've really got a kind of a balkanized metropolitan area, and I don't see any really effective strategies that have come to the fore to bridge those gaps. And the more that we balkanize in that way and the more that we leave the central city to becoming increasingly impoverished and with increasingly high rates of unemployment and decreasing economic resources, we really face a combustible, polarized mix in this community.
Well, as much as I don't want to end on that note, I think that's where we're at this point, and it certainly sets us up for an interesting conversation in the forum. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
Mark Levine is a professor of history and director of the Center for Economic Development at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He spoke with Mitch Teich. You can hear more from Mark Levine as part of the WUWM Forum on Race Relations. That forum will be broadcast tomorrow on Lake Effect and archived on our website, wuwm.com.